Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
It's really essential, particularly for the labor market.
Federal Reserve raising rates by 50 basis points on Wednesday. It was widely expected, but actually it was Chairman Jerome Powell's comments that sparked a sharp rally in stocks. He said that the Federal Reserve not considering raising rates by 75 points.
If you think about it, if you look at the last cycle, we had a very, very longest expansion cycle in our recorded history. And in the last 2-3 years, you had the benefits of this tight labor market going to people in the lower quartiles. And it was, you know, racial wealth and income, not wealth, but income gaps were coming down, wage gaps. So it's a really great thing. We'd all love to get back to that place. But to get back to anything like that place, you need price stability.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I deal with a number of types of traders. So I've got hedgers who are intermediate term focused, and then I've got the speculators, which can be all over the calendar, meaning really short term traders, intermediate term traders, and then longer term traders. And not only just in the futures markets and the commodity markets that we talk about, but the stock market too, that I've chat with customers about.
Referring to the current volatility in the markets, Bob Mowers with Manduca Trading, he's in Chicago.
The bottom line is that there isn't one person that I've talked to that thinks, I think things will blow over in the next month or two. I mean, there's no chatter like that. So everybody's still on a heightened alert of this impact, this amped up volatility, and nobody seems like it has an opinion where they think it's going to really abate much over the short term. So really it's something that you need to become comfortable with, as hard as that is to say. At least what's happened over the last couple of years, and maybe in the last couple of months to amp it up ever since the Russian invasion into Ukraine, or whatever you want to call it, has been the fact that we're getting a little more familiar with the volatility. The hardest thing to do from a trader's perspective, or in my opinion, is to kind of figure out when things aren't the way they normally are. And it kind of takes a while to do that for many traders. And it's just one of those things that you need to adjust to and adapt to, or you tend to get hurt. So I think it's, at this point, something that we're becoming more familiar with. And what that really means is, from my perch, is that traders and speculators and hedgers and guys who are involved with the cash business, those who are more apt to like volatility in the marketplace and see it as opportunistic are hopping in and, you know, with full jumping into the water, whereas those who don't are finally learning to have pulled back a little bit and maybe wait for more ideal scenarios that they think they can judge the risk and reward for. So I think there was a long-winded answer to your setup there, but nonetheless, the volatility is here and it just does not seem to be going away.
But with so many things making headlines, what are traders most focused on today? Mauer says,
I think it's the elephant in the room, which is what's going on in terms of the supply chain, in terms of supply from certain what had been reliable areas, that being the breadbasket, one of the breadbaskets in the world, that being Ukraine and Russia, and how that's going to trickle on and move on and continue to evolve in terms of supply out there, and just the pressures that we're seeing from that particular scenario. Also, had we not had that situation evolving, there still would be the normal things that we look at, which are weather, for example, and how that's impacting production around the world, energy prices, whatever you want to, you know, however you want to frame the approach towards what you think about what's happening to the climate and those bigger things. So those haven't gone away. In addition, you've got some of the bigger elements that are more recent, like the supply chain issues, like I mentioned, and the breadbasket issue with Ukraine and Russia. So those are the things that we are always top of mind these days. And then as we move forward, we kind of drill down into the data, and then we get the monthly reports like you mentioned, and they can include like cattle on feed, and then the WASDE reports, and then the numerous other reports like export sales that we get. So we just continue to take that data within the context of some of the bigger stuff that's happening and try to figure out what's going on.
That's Bob Mauer with Manduca Trading in Chicago. I'm Tony St. James. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
My name is Don Schiefelbein. I am a cattle producer from Kimball, Minnesota. Together with my wife, my three fabulous daughters, parents, seven brothers, six nephews, and our spouses and children, we own and operate Schiefelbein Farms, an entirely family-owned, diversified farming operation, which includes both seed stock production and cattle feeding.
Schiefelbein testifying recently before the House Ag Committee, a hearing on the examination of price discrepancies, transparency, and alleged unfair practices in cattle markets.
My testimony today is rooted in policies submitted, debated, voted on, and adopted by cattle producers through NCBA's century-old policymaking process. The cattle industry is home to the most complex markets on earth. The intricacies of this system have been highly scrutinized over the past years, but the fundamental dynamics at play have been consistent through times of plenty and hardship. Let me be clear. Cattle producers know best what they do and do not need to do in order to be successful. I implore you to listen to what producers are telling you. The hearing focuses on meat packers. We share the committee's concern about the consolidation, but we would have preferred to discuss a host of more pressing challenges with you today. Make no mistake, curbing rampant inflation and skyrocketing input costs, addressing urgent labor shortages, and increasing market transparencies are the true immediate needs of producers. I urge you, do not let today's proceedings disguise that fact. Producer leverage with packers has been a hot topic over a century. However, of greatest concern to NCBA is the current shortage of adequate beef packing capacity, not seen in several decades. NCBA has supported measures both in Congress and with the Biden administration to increase packer capacity. Most importantly, we have continued to advocate for those new facilities to be small, regionally focused small businesses. Following both the Holcomb fire and COVID-19, packer capacity losses resulted in the highest recorded spreads between boxed beef and live cattle, $67.17 per hundredweight and $279 per hundredweight, respectfully. This behavior is rooted in basic laws of supply and demand, but given the magnitude of these price disparities, it would have been imprudent not to further scrutinize the packers. That is precisely why NCBA called upon the Department of Justice to investigate the four major packers. The results of this investigation have yet to be released, but I urge Congress to proceed carefully as we await the findings. I ask that you continue to engage with the Attorney General as he continues this investigation and hold off on crafting new legislation until a determination has been made. NCBA strongly supports robust enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act and believes the Department of Agriculture has adequate legal authority to enforce it properly. We support the Biden administration's effort to streamline collaboration between the Packers and Stockyards Division and the Justice Department. But we do not believe creating a new office with the USDA is the proper way to enhance enforcement. Briefly, I would like to address the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act, Senate Bill 4030, and its House companion, H.R. 5992. NCPA opposes this legislation. Freedom to market matters. It has allowed cattle producers like myself to respond directly to consumer needs. If the government were to erode this freedom or completely take it away, everyone suffers. In closing, Mr. Chairman, I ask you and this committee to listen to cattle producers and address the real threats to our industry. For too long, Congress has been gridlocked by a handful of controversial policies while a host of widely supported measures await enactment. It is time to move on and focus on areas where agreement can be met.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I wish I had better news from the, you know, from the forecasters.
It's Dr. Ed Barnes. He's Senior Director of Agricultural and Environmental Research with Cotton Incorporated.
One thing I think at this point in the year is a great time to pay attention. Ryan Kurtz, who also leads our kind of outreach program, and we have a website called Cotton Cultivated. It's Cotton Cultivated as one word, .cottoninc.com, or just Google or search Cotton Cultivated, and it'll bring you there. You scroll down the page a little bit, and you'll see a weather outlook that's updated every week, and it's Eric Snodgrass of Agrible, who gives some really insightful comments on, you know, what to expect in the coming week and the longer term. And one thing he'll talk about, you know, is called ENSO, which is probably many people hear about El Nino or La Nina. And right now we're in the La Nina, which is never great for cotton. We've looked at historic yields over the last 40 years. In the La Nina year, the whole cotton belt tends to be lower because of decreased precipitation. So the latest forecast is that the negative is the latest forecast says La Nina is probably going to persist through the summer, which is not good. The positive is there's a lot of uncertainty in that forecast. So hopefully they're wrong. But right now, you know, the outlook's pretty tough. The Southwest is, you know, I don't need to tell a lot of your listeners, definitely bone dry. And so if if people have water with a dollar something cotton, we want to make the best use of it.
Dr. Barnes also talks about the importance of irrigation tools.
With, you know, limited well capacities, and again, just it's so dry, meeting those water needs is going to be tough. And so one of the things, in West Texas there, Jim Burdowski was a longtime ag engineer, did some really, groundbreaking work on understanding how to manage water in cotton, and he showed pretty conclusively that a lot of pre-watering is not a good use of that water. So, you got to have water to get the crop out of the ground, but trying to bank it, he's demonstrated over many years that that's just not a good way to go. You really want to save that water for when the crop's up, when you're starting to get squares and flowers on it. That's when you're going to get the biggest return on your investment. So that's one, kind of easy thing. And then it gets, more challenging as the crop gets up and you start thinking, okay, when do I put that next irrigation out? And so there are a lot of tools out there. And if you'll bear with me, I'll call out Cotton Cultivated again, just so people can find some of those tools. If you go to that website, you'll see at the pretty close to the top of the page, as you scroll a little bit down, there's a button called Production. And you click on Production, and then it'll bring up kind of the different protection steps during the year. And one of those is water management. And so you click on water management, and that's going to pull up a lot of the water management resources around the country. You can even go one step further, and if you want to filter it down to the region, you can filter it down, say you're in the Southwest, you can filter it down so you only get, kind of information relative to the Southwest. So that's a tool that I would encourage people to take a look at.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I, as chairman, am coming into this hearing with an open mind.
And he is the chairman of the House Ag Committee from Georgia, David Scott.
And I hope and I'm sure that my colleagues on the committee are too. Because hearings provide us with opportunities to facilitate open discourse and get public answers to some very difficult questions. And I do not have any foregone conclusions on the subject of today's hearing, but I am alarmed at the serious allegations that are out there and concerning stories about what has been happening in our packing industry. So my goal for this hearing is to get answers to those questions and have the packers speak about these allegations.
The recent hearing called Price Discrepancies, Transparency, and Alleged Unfair Practices in the Cattle Markets.
Since the 1980s, we have seen a steady increase in the concentration in the packing industry. And this consolidation has coincided with a steady decrease in the number of cattle ranchers over that same period. In one analysis that I read, the authors noted that over a half of a million ranchers have gone out of business since the 80s. This threatens the food security of our great nation. The average is out to about 17,000 cattle operations a year. This statistic is highly worrisome, and it is a direct and an alarming threat to our nation's food supply, our nation's food security. And the family cattle farmer is an essential part of our country and its food system.
William Ruffin with Ruffin Farms in Bay Springs, Mississippi, says, though, a legislative remedy is needed.
Without the information that we could get that this bill may provide us if it's passed, and I only get one bid, which is basically what I do for my cattle now, I don't really ever know exactly what the cash market is. As I said, we sell our cattle in an environment where there are very little cash cattle traded. That's in that Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico market and Kansas market. I don't have any, if there's not a cash basis, I have absolutely no way whatsoever to determine whether or not I'm getting a good value. But the biggest problem is, without a cash value, they put the independent feed yards out of business. And I have no way of knowing, you know, that's where that I got bids for all my life in the cattle business. And I'm here telling you what I've experienced. And I got good bids from those. I felt comfortable with them. A fair market value is what a willing seller will pay and what a willing buyer will take for it. The part we always forget is when they're not under duress. Name me a person now that's selling cattle in this complex we have now that's not under duress, a producer side. I always feel that. So I don't feel like I get a fair price.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The demand picture is definitely robust moving forward, and curious to see how it shakes out over the summer as we start to kick off the grilling season.
Tyler Cousins is with the Livestock Marketing Information Center, takes a look back at cash cattle trade.
Now, kind of looking at the fed cattle side of things, looking specifically at the five area average price, USDA reported formula and contract base prices for live steers and heifers this week ranged about $140 to $146 per hundredweight. Now, last week, prices ranged about $141 to $144. So this last week, we had a wider range of prices compared to about 2 weeks ago. Well, one of the things I want to point out was actually on February 22nd, we actually saw the highest Fed price for the year, and that was $145 per hundredweight. Now, last week, daily prices reached over that $145 mark. They actually peaked at $145.86 per hundredweight. So this set a new high for the year. So definitely some positive news there. Now, on the dressed basis side of things, steers and heifers were $219 to $223 per hundredweight versus about $217 to $222 last week. So slightly better from the prior week. But overall, we're still seeing some strength in this cash cattle prices, despite the bearish tone from that recent cattle on feed report.
He's also been focused on the retail activity report from USDA.
And specifically, they're looking at retail beef activity at major retail outlets. And one of the data points that is of interest is the feature rate activity for beef. Now, USDA Ag Marketing Service defines the feature rate as the amount of sampled stores advertising any reported beef item that week. So, for example, feature rate activity for retail beef is typically about 74% through the first quarter of the year, meaning that of the stores sampled, 74% were advertising beef that week. Now, last year, the feature rate activity was 75%, so about a typical level that we would expect for retail beef advertising. Now, last week, the most recent data available shows that feature rate activity was actually 75%, or about 10% below typical levels. Now, this isn't too unexpected, right, because we're a few weeks away from Memorial Day, but as we get closer to the grilling season, we would expect this feature rate activity to start to increase in the coming weeks as retailers start to feature more beef in the meat case. Now, typically, the cuts that we'll see featured are the chuck, round, loin, and ground beef. So on that note, what I want to kind of point out was looking at retail meat prices, consumers are facing higher prices, especially beef. The most recent retail beef price data from USDA's Economic Research Services for the month of March, and that data showed that actually the retail beef prices in March were $7.76 cents per pound. This is up $1.20 per pound from last year. Now, beef prices are expected to remain elevated in April. And why I say that is, you know, when we're looking at these wholesale prices as a gauge for April retail prices, for those cuts typically featured during this grilling season, the chuck, the round, the loin, and ground beef, you know, what we're seeing is actually that prices are down for the chuck and loin, but looking at the round and ground beef, those are both up. You know, I think it's also important to note that ground beef hit a record price level in March of $4.76 per pound. That's 17% above 2021. So the ground beef prices will likely remain high in April. And so lastly, what we're seeing is that the inflationary environment that we're living in, also coupled with the slowing in the herd rebuilding efforts, will likely keep beef prices elevated.
Tyler Cousins is with the LMIC, the Livestock Marketing Information Center. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Actions by EPA over the last few years have been something that we have watched very closely.
Dr. Gary Adams is president and CEO of the National Cotton Council.
Dicamba is one of those products that gets a lot of attention. We've seen label changes over the last two or three years. There's some legal challenges going on right now. There were concerns coming out of the 2021 crop, particularly out of the Midwest, on some of those drift issues that seemed to put the crosshairs on dicamba. You know, I think, and I emphasize the word think in terms of what will happen. I believe we'll be okay for 2022, that growers will have access and use it as the label is right now. I do believe that we need to be prepared, though, for some changes potentially with 2023. EPA, again, is looking at potential label changes. I think they'll be working with the registrants as we go through 2022. We don't really have a good idea of what those changes will be, but we as the National Cotton Council will take every opportunity we have to try to weigh in with EPA just to make sure that we can protect the ability to use those products in a timely manner. And so that's something we're going to continue to monitor going forward.
That's just one of the distractions involving EPA. Another is with Waters of the U.S., or WOTUS.
We just really don't have a clear picture of where EPA wants to go with Waters of the U.S. We felt like the Navigable Waters Protection Rule that was put in under President Trump's administration, we felt like that worked well. We know that was vacated by a court order. And then there was, of course, prior to that, there was the WOTUS that was put in by the Obama administration. We haven't reverted back to that either. We've essentially reverted under this EPA back to some of the regulations that were in place with the Clean Water Act of the mid-1980s. So it's been a bit of a roller coaster in terms of what are the rules. And now we're just trying to figure out and decide, okay, where's EPA going to go over the course of the next year or so in terms of trying to put a new rule in place. But our concern is that they overstep in terms of their reach of what waters they have jurisdiction over, and then it gets to a point where farmers aren't able to engage in normal farming practices. So that's what we're really trying to guard against.
And if that's clear as mud, then what's the latest on the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol?
Well, we did just wrap up data collection for the 2021 harvest, and my understanding right now on the latest data is we've got about 650 producers that participated from the 2021 harvest, which is more than double the number that we had in 2020. So we've been very pleased to see the adoption by producers. And we know, you know, the practices that we're documenting now through the trust protocol and the data we're collecting, it really reflects the practices that producers have been doing for decades. I mean, they have been and continue to be the best environmental stewards of the land. Now, this trust protocol just gives us an opportunity to collect that information, aggregate the information, and be able to tell that sustainability story of U.S. cotton production, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we keep markets open for U.S. cotton and that we meet the needs of the brands and retailers from a sustainability perspective. And so I think the trust protocol is the way to do that and to keep those markets open so that we can ensure that we get U.S. cotton into all supply chains.
Dr. Gary Adams, President and CEO of the National Cotton Council, online at cotton.org. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Making appropriate monetary policy in this uncertain environment requires a recognition that the economy often evolves in unexpected ways.
Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell Wednesday after the Fed raised rates by 50 points.
Inflation has obviously surprised to the upside over the past year, and further surprises could be in store. We therefore will need to be nimble in responding to incoming data and the evolving outlook. And we will strive to avoid adding uncertainty to what is already an extraordinarily challenging and uncertain time. We are highly attentive to inflation risks. The committee is determined to take the measures necessary to restore price stability. The American economy is very strong and well-positioned to handle tighter monetary policy. To conclude, we understand that our actions affect communities, families, and businesses across the country. Everything we do is in service to our public mission. We at the Fed will do everything we can to achieve our maximum employment and price stability goals.